Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 399 for comics originally released on April 1st, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Convergence Number Zero. Now, this is kicking off the two-month weekly event over at DC, where apparently they try to acknowledge everything they've ever done and say, yes, it all still matters. Please continue to buy our comics. I literally just read this moments ago. I have had just a crazy week or two, so I haven't really had time for my thoughts on this to kind of fully bake. Again, the basic concept here is, they're gonna mishmash all the different worlds, throw combinations together, have characters fight, and it'll be just not only a fun 9-issue miniseries, the Zero and then the other 8, but also I think there are 42-issue miniseries that we're gonna have for the next 2 months. 10 a week, the first issues, then the second issues. Again, mashing together different parts of the, not even the DC multiverse, but just kind of stuff they've published over the years. Now, I know you're a big Batman fan, I know you've been reading a lot of comics and stuff, but for something like this, how well-versed do you feel in kind of that bigger picture of everything DC has ever done? And you feel ready to go into this kind of an event?
I feel woefully unprepared for this event. I feel like it's gonna leave me behind a little bit. But you know, that's no one's fault but my own, because I wasn't around for a lot of these storylines.
I would disagree. If you feel left behind, they have messed up as storytellers. Their goal should be to entice you to say, "Wow, this is really cool. I need to go check out those back issues." So to me, that's an opportunity for them to sell something. If they're relying on us having encyclopedic knowledge of all this past stuff, they've been publishing 75 years, that's unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably some stuff in here that went over my head, but, you know, it's a Brainiac story, and it's a bunch of Brainiacs, and it's a bunch of little cities in bottles and stuff, and I'm like, I recognize some of these things from things that I've read, but I don't think I know exactly what I should know to enjoy it fully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the art's fantastic. Is that Skyver? Ethan Van Skyver on art, and the writers are Juergens, is that right?
Dan Juergens and Jeff King.
Yeah, and so good team, and it's a Zero issue. I'm kind of curious as to what the first issue, if it will be this Superman centric, you know.
I'm kind of figuring it's not. This felt like it was setting the stage for the story, and like the story itself hadn't really kicked off.
Yeah.
And that there's going to be one aspect of kind of the Superman thing continuing and pulling together at the very end to wrap it up. But then everything else, almost the main meat of Convergence, of all the different worlds and stuff, we're going to start that with the first issue.
Now, what I did think was cool was they did do a who's who in Convergence at the end of this Zero issue.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of laid the groundwork for a little bit of background on all these different things that will be touched upon throughout Convergence, and which we've been clamoring for weeks now, their first appearances of said worlds and where you can look them up, which I thought was kind of nice.
Yeah, they should have had this sort of a reference or whatever when they did the Multiversity Handbook or Guidebook, because, I mean, this is cool, and this is part of where I'm struggling with Convergence in so much as Multiversity and the other stuff going on, of they've given numbers to certain worlds, but this is kind of saying none of that really matters. What they're referencing here is Earth 3 and Earth 4 and all that stuff. It has nothing to do with what they're doing over in Multiversity. This is just the old school DC stuff, which on the one hand I'm cool with. It makes sense. I was around for much of that, but it does make it seem a little confused as to do they have a solid direction over at DC right now or not.
Yeah, and the way they are referencing some of these eras, you know, they're not putting it in an earth or a number on it. You know, it's just an era or a storyline or pre Flashpoint Gotham City or pre Crisis Earth One Gotham City. It's referencing things that way, just in kind of specific points in time in DC.
Well, and not even literally just DC, because Hub City Earth 4, technically that's characters they bought, and the Earth 4 never really showed up as such other than a few pages in Crisis on Infinite Earths. So all of the publishing history there is outside of DC, technically, or was published outside of DC and then became part of DC. And I think there's one or two others that may fall into that category, but I'm not positive. I've read a surprising amount of the source material that they're leaning on for this, and some of it kind of surprises me. The New York City Angor, really, that's from a couple of issues of Justice League Europe. The Earth A they reference is from one of the JLA-JSA team-ups. So some of these aren't even major places in the grand scheme of things over at DC over the decades.
Yeah.
Other parts, certainly, Captain Carrot, Shazam, you know, the New Earth 2, the Old Earth 2, Earth X, Antimatter Universe, all that stuff. I mean, they're doing some fun stuff. Well, in the San Diego, California for Wildcats, again, almost all of that was published under the Image banner over the years.
And there's a Sugar and Spike, I saw, which I'd never heard of that.
That was one of those properties I came across in the DC Digests, Blue Ribbon Digest, Adventure Comics. Actually, that was more Legion of Superheroes and Shazam. And I'm trying to think which, there were a few digests back in the 80s, where they just did all sorts of reprints. So that's where I'd read some stuff on that, some of the older, you know, like Bottle City of Kandor, and some of those stories and whatnot.
See, I'm surprised that this feels like fan service to me. This feels like a greatest hits tour that a band would do. Mm-hmm. And I would think that older readers and readers that miss the old days or love this era of DC would just be eating this up.
Well, I think so, because I think the Greatest Hits Tour is a good analogy for this. And that was one of the things I liked about this issue, but also one of the things that kind of frustrated me a little with this issue. Because we get the new current Superman, and we've got Brainiac throughout the ages. It's like his greatest hits or whatever. Every time he turns around, he looks a little different.
Yeah.
And it was a little confusing to me at one point of, is he just constantly changing his look, or are we seeing different Brainiacs or both?
Yeah, I may have misinterpreted that because I thought there might have been multiple Brainiacs, but maybe it is just one.
At first, it looked like he just kept changing his look, but then once we got the, you know, there are the bottled cities and stuff like that, then he seems to splinter out into a multitude of characters. And I've been around long enough that I recognize where many of these Brainiacs are from. You know, everything from Pulsar Stargrave, who was around for the Legion of Superheroes stuff, to the original green skinned look, the one from the animated series, you know, on up and down. But how many of the people that are having that kind of nostalgia kick are really enthralled with the new 52 stuff? And are they selling this almost to the wrong crowd? You know, if they had used this around the time of Flashpoint to launch it into a new universe, okay, that would have made sense. But doing it just a few years after Flashpoint to, hey, here's all the stuff we threw out, we've decided it really does matter now, but we're going to have them duke it out, and whichever one wins, that's what we're going to stick with. It really seems to send a confused message to the readers, at least to me.
I don't know. With New 52 imprint going away, I guess they're just saying, well, that didn't work, and so let's bring back everything that you've missed, and just, we tried it. We tried this, and it just didn't work as well as we had hoped.
Well, they hear that we as readers want stories that matter. So how are they pitching this? Everything matters. Every story matters. Well, if they all do, then do any of them is a little bit of it there. And the solicit for this issue is really talking more about the grand story than what's happening here. Because it was promising Kingdom Come, Red Sun, Wild West Justice League, Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew, all of that. And they're alluded to more in the back matter here than in the story itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm just assuming it's in somewhere in these issues, eight issues that are coming up, we'll get some of that stuff that's in the back matter there.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm figuring too. I thought this was an interesting setup, but I had mixed feelings, but it's more around where do I think they're going than are they telling a good story here. This was aside from a little bit of a weak ending, because it was a zero issue and it's a launch pad kind of a thing. I thought this was a fun read, a good read. It had some good moments, but there was a bit of that fan service, that greatest hits tour feel to it, and I'm... on the one hand, liking that. On the other hand, I'm kind of over that, given how much of the backstory on stuff they've just kicked out over the last half decade. I really think this summer is a pivotal time for DC, and I'm not sure that with Convergence and what's coming after it, if that's positioning them as best as they could be positioned.
Well, my concern also is if there are a lot of readers who were on the fence about Convergence, and they used the zero issue to determine if they wanted to read it, I don't know if this is the right, if this is going to catapult them into it. I think there's some probably foundational stuff here, but it's not really a grab you by your shirt collars and say, read me type of book. It was above average. I mean, and it had some nice stuff in it, but it didn't feel like an on-ramp for the series and something that you really wanted to read.
To me, this is more of a jumping on than a jumping in point. You could read this and just kind of bounce right out of the story.
Yeah.
Yep. Got it. Not sold.
Yeah, I got it. I guess I'll ask somebody later what happened. I don't think I really want to read this. That's what I'm concerned, that there wasn't enough in this issue. And, you know, I don't know if we're expecting too much from a zero issue. It's really the job of a number one, but it came out first, so.
Zero issue, number one issue, to me, tomato, tomato. They needed to sell this really well, and I thought they told a good issue, they told a good story, but this is the kind of thing that right now I think DC needed to kick this off with something that was just so far behind, beyond just a 5 out of 5 stars kind of a rating kind of a deal. Something that's just, oh my god, everybody has got to read this. I don't think this was that. It was certainly well above average. I mean, to me, it was a solid B rating. It was good. It was enjoyable. I liked the art. I liked the story. But is it something that I'm going to go shout from the rooftops, everybody's got to go read? No.
Yeah, I'm at a B minus, and so right in the same ballpark there. And, you know, I'm just kind of lingering over the last couple of pages thinking, okay, I get where we're going to go with this, but do I care enough to keep going? And this issue really didn't make me care that much about it. And that's the problem.
Well, the question I have for you then, based on those last couple of pages, do you think the next issue is going to follow Superman, Brainiac, or something else entirely?
Well, we've got the bat signal in the one bubbled city there.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's kind of a place we might go.
And there's only about 15 or 20 Gotham cities listed, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we could go to any of those. I don't know. I'm not sure. Are these going to be double-sized books?
I'm not sure.
I'm not either. This one is just normal. A little bigger.
I mean, to me, they've almost set this up as a March Madness, you know, basketball playoff kind of a thing.
Yeah.
We're putting these two worlds together, let's see what the brackets are.
Yeah. It does feel like a Mortal Kombat situation or something.
So, again, I liked it. It was good, but I was really hoping they were going to come out with something that just knocked my socks off.
Yeah, I'm much more excited about the books that are coming out after Convergence. You know, that new slate of number ones and everything else that's coming back out. I'm much more excited about that than I am the two issue miniseries and the event itself. So I'm gonna give some of them a try, but I'm much more interested in what happens afterwards.
I can totally understand.
Still, and I was hoping this would kind of change my mind, but I'm gonna read the first issue of Convergence and second issue of Convergence and give it a shot.
How do you think this might have played out if instead of going with the Superman versus Brainiac story this issue, they had told a similar kind of a story, but in place of Superman, we had maybe one of the Zoo Crew members, one of the Atomic Knights, one of the lesser characters in Batman Beyond, you know, and just a smattering of more obscure characters, you know, one of the freedom fighters, that kind of a thing, who are just kind of, well, we've got to band together and we've got to go, you know, make the peace or something, where we could have at least gone in thinking, who are these characters, get to know them, get to care about them, and have that kind of drive us forward into, oh, wow, there's DC, who knew it had all this stuff? You know, that kind of a vibe.
I think we would have been criticizing them for not using some of their A-list talent in the first issue.
Yeah, A-list characters, you mean?
Yeah.
Fair point. There is a certain, no matter what they do, they're going to get criticized.
But a nice blending of the two would have been cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would have kind of given you more of a sense of what you're in for as this event progresses.
Well, what's funny is another approach they could have taken to the two-issue miniseries that could have been a lot of fun is have one that is basically, okay, and maybe they would do, you know, 8 issues like this, just one a week. Here's Superman, all of them. Here's all the different versions of, you know, Batman or Wonder Woman or Flash or whatever, or maybe some teams or some groups, to where you could do a little bit more compare contrast kind of a deal. Because it really does feel like from the solicits on Convergence, they're playing favorites with, you know, obviously Metropolis and Gotham City based characters and settings. Granted, there's a ton of them to pick from, but also Kingdom Come, Earth 2, and a few other things seem to be getting more than I think their fair shake. And there are a lot of settings that, you know, we're just not seeing. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how it goes. I'm hoping to enjoy it a lot as just a longtime DC fan. But I was hoping they really would have knocked my socks off.
Yeah. And so far, not really.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
This is The Uncanny Inhumans number 0. This is written by Charles Soule. We got art by Steve McNiven. And this is, they say it's the prelude to one of the biggest launches of 2015 here, because we're going to get an Uncanny Inhuman series in a couple of months. This issue confused me a little bit as to when it was taking place. It seems to be right on the edge of events that have just happened over in the Inhuman series that Charles Soule is writing. Yet we've still got the Terra Genesis cloud active in, like, Brazil at the beginning of this. So I'm like, is this thing just continuing to circle the world and we're going to have more cocoons just on a forever basis or something? I was a little perplexed by that. Now, are you keeping up with everything going on with the Inhumans these days?
No, I dropped off that.
I can understand that. There are issues where I think Charles Soule is really on his A-game on that book. Other issues, not so much. And it really comes down to which characters are they playing with. They're A-list characters or they're not so much characters.
And Black Bolt wasn't in it when I was reading it, so I don't really know him that well.
You know, he's one of those longtime Marvel characters that I feel like I am more aware of than knowledgeable of, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I've read tons of stories with him in it. You know, everything from what's going on with the Illuminati in recent years to some previous Inhuman series to, you know, other stories he's been in.
Yeah, I may have seen him as an ancillary character or somebody off to the side, but I don't think I ever knew any of his power set, and I didn't realize he didn't speak or spoke very quietly.
I knew he didn't speak because my understanding of his power set, and this issue has me questioning it, is that his voice was kind of like Black Canary's sonic cry, but just way more powerful.
Okay.
You know, a whisper of him is like a megaton bomb going off kind of a deal. So he can speak, but it just leaves mass destruction, so he doesn't. And they kind of address that a little bit here. There are a few times he, you know, whispers and there's the destruction or whatever, but there's also one or two places where he seems to have some kind of control over it in a way I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
But beyond his flight and destructive, you know, voice powers, I am unclear what his powers are. I've never really gone back and read some of the early Inhuman stuff that really set this character up, and I think that is some of the pivotal canon for this character. And while he's been used a lot since then, I don't know, and maybe it's just my ignorance, I don't know that there's any other run that's as authoritative or informative about the character as that.
And so he and Medusa have this kid.
Yes.
Uhura?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Not to be confused with the one on the Enterprise. Totally different spelling.
And gender and race, yes.
Yes, and, totally different character then even.
And is that character established anywhere, or is this the first time we're kind of meeting him?
We've seen this character before, but this is a character I do not feel is well established, and that was part of what didn't pull me into this story, is he's been out of the picture for a while, and he's never felt like a... when I think of an Inhuman child, I think of Luna, the daughter of Crystal and Quicksilver. That's the Inhuman kid I think of. This one, he exists, I guess. So that's part of why I feel like I know of these characters, but I am not well enough immersed in these characters. And I've been reading Marvel pretty whole hog since the original Secret Wars.
I didn't really have anything there, because when what happens, you need think there'd be some emotional connection, and there wasn't for me.
No, not at all. The kid comes off as a bit of a jerk, and Black Bolt as a father doesn't come off all that well, but that whole exchange and stuff there at the end, I don't know, the ending of this issue didn't play exceptionally well for me. It's one of those, it's clearly setting stuff up for the series, and it's going to be a few months before we get to that series.
Yeah, and I guess, the Terrigen Mist unleashed some kind of power in him, and it's to be determined what that is and who that character becomes, and we'll be introduced to a new character then, I'm guessing. We'll come back around to that kid again.
Mm-hmm. So he may encounter Black Bolt, and it may be a while before Black Bolt realizes it's his son.
True, true. And then the backup story I thought was pretty inconsequential.
Yeah, it was one of those where I think, again, they're setting something up. I didn't really care what and why. But for a, five-page story?
Yeah.
It was all right. I think they're pushing the Inhumans heavy these days and going almost on the assumption that we'll just accept them as I don't say more than what they are, but it doesn't feel organic. It doesn't feel like these characters are just coming into prominence because they're so interesting. It's because they're getting so forced on us. And they're cool characters. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking the Inhumans. But there's a lack of authenticity or I don't know, something about the way they're pushing them these days. Everything from the Terrigen Genesis cloud or whatever to this whole cocoon thing and all of it. It just, I don't know, it feels a little forced.
Yeah, they don't, it doesn't feel like it deserves three series to be going on. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a group of characters that are, that popular, but, maybe they will be.
I'm expecting Uncanny Inhumans to replace Inhuman. So I'm expecting just one title out of those two. What's the third one you're counting?
I had read somewhere that at the end of the event, Marvel event, there will be three concurrent Inhumans titles at that point.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm a little behind on
I don't have those names in front of me. I don't know which one is which, so.
I'm going to go with the all-new Uncanny Mighty Inhumans and Spider-Man. Just toss
it. Yeah, now that might do it. That might actually tip the scale.
Yeah, it's... Three titles seems a bit much, and that goes towards my feeling of I think they're really kind of pushing these characters in this franchise heavy.
I mean, it wasn't a real bad story. I kind of enjoyed it, even though I didn't really know that much about Black Bolt. I thought it was okay, and but we're at a place where it's a above average story, a decent read. Is it enough for me to be jazzed for that series to launch? Nope. Unfortunately, no.
So what rating?
Oh, I gave it C+. I'm sorry.
C+. Okay. For me, first off, McNiven art, hard to go wrong with that. It was beautiful to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how there were a few places where it was a little decompressed, but enough happened in this issue. So it was a good blending of that. I'm a little annoyed by how they're, again, forcing the characters on us and stuff. But I enjoyed the issue. It was good. It was clearly setting some stuff up, but also felt like this issue had some meat to it. I didn't know where they were going with one or two characters in this, but I liked it. So for me, it was a solid B. And it's funny because I think both this and Convergence are, as zero issues, setting the stage for what's to come, and telling a full-ish story.
Yeah.
But again, a springboard kind of a story. There's obviously a lot more to come in both cases. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is The Private Eye, number 10 from PanelSyndicate.com. And this is the final issue of the series. It's a digital-only series. That's not digital first and print later. It's digital only. It's by Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin, and Musta Vicente. These guys are just doing a great job here. There are no two ways about it. I thought this was a great end to a great series. And while I'd love to get the collected edition in print, there are no plans for it to be published in print. And I get it. I think there's a certain aspect that fits the story, that fits the what they're trying to do, etc. But man, you know, I look at this, it was a fun story. I think there's got to be a way to get it into more hands, because I think a lot more people ought to read it.
Yeah, I wonder worldwide distribution on this, how many folks have read it. I mean, it's in so many languages, it's been translated in so many languages, and it is affordable for the world. You know, from anybody who has a computer can read this comic, and they don't have to pay a dime if they don't want to, and they can get this whole story. So I would be curious about what that worldwide distribution is.
I would love to know. I hope it's huge, because these guys, first off, if you haven't read the series, go over to PandleSyndicate.com, check it out. All 10 issues are there, plus a couple issues of Universe, the other series that Panel Syndicate's doing. The pricing on this, as you said, it's highly affordable. I can't imagine any more affordable way to go unless you were to start getting paid to read comics, which I would be okay with, but I don't see that happening. It's a pay as much or as little as you want.
Yeah.
So you've got nothing to lose to go check this out other than a little bit of time, or a lot of time. It's 12 or 10 issues, but they're full issues. They're good page count on these things. And it's told landscape versus portrait mode. So it's the equivalent of taking a comic 90 degrees or whatever, but no staple, no page flipping. You just go to the next screen. None of this fancy crap of click, get a dialogue balloon, click, it gets replaced, click, get a, no. These are just, they could literally just print this stuff out without any adaptation whatsoever, which is not the case for some other things in digital. What those other companies are doing, Thrillbents along these lines, the Infinite Comics at Marvel, I think those things are cool. They're just not really what I'm interested in. This is ironic. They could go to print, drop of a, you know, a PDF, literally, but they're choosing not to. So go pay as much or nothing and get the whole story for free. You can't beat that.
Yeah. I mean, I sampled the first issue for nothing. And then, you know, I threw them 99 cents for the subsequent issues. And I feel like I kind of cheated them a little bit. So it's a really great read, and it's well worth, you know, whatever you pay, because it's fantastic and it's a great experience. And I envy you if you haven't read it, because you're going to be able to blow through them.
Yeah.
In one sitting. And, because of the delivery model here and the fact that these guys are working on this as a passion project between their paying gigs that they got a steady paycheck on, it was erratic. There were some time between issues that, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months between an issue at a time sometimes. And sometimes they did really well and they'd put them out regularly, but sometimes they had problems. So it took about 2 years to get these 10 issues out. And so I think maybe a year.
That sounds about right. Right. Because it was – previous one was, I think, back in December.
Yeah. And so this – I do. I envy you if you're reading this in one chunk, because it works really well.
A trick. Well, when you recommended this, they were on, what, their fourth issue?
Yeah, I think so.
I blew through the first four in no time. It's like, I read the first one. It's like, you know, because I did it a day before we were going to review. It's like, oh, this may take a little time. It's like, wow, great read. Plowed through the next and the next and stuff. So I agree entirely. Anyone who hasn't read it, download all 10. Be ready to just plow through the thing, because the story pulls you forward, I think. It really has a good sense of momentum. It pauses where it needs to between issues. It was never really hard to get back into the story. And if you're doing it back to back, it's not going to be an issue at all.
No. It was a little loss of story momentum, I'm not going to lie, because of the delays to this last issue. But not enough to detract from it. And to kind of, that doesn't squash the enjoyment of the overall series and of this issue that closed this story off, and left a little bit of possibility for something else to happen in it. So yeah, it was really great. It was a really great world that was built, and it's a world that you could see a variety of stories being told, and some of the characters kind of getting their own one shots or something. Gramps was my breakout character. I really loved that character. I thought he was great. And there's tons to love about this book, from the art to the colors to the writing, the world building, the character development. It was just a really great story and a fun little murder mystery that was woven in throughout this. So I have to give this thing an A because I just enjoyed it so very much.
I agree entirely. This thing is phenomenally well done. In my opinion, it's how print comics should be, or not print, digital comics should be done. The world building to me is really what I loved the most about it. The characters were awesome, the story, the art, but a post-internet world that really makes sense as to how it got that way, why they're off the internet, what the ramifications were, all that stuff. The whole concept of a possible role that journalists could play in society, mm-hmm. whether we would want them to or not, different issue. But there was a not a cleverness to it, but to me, this is true science fiction in that respect. They took an idea, they ran with it, they played it out. They didn't sensationalize it. They didn't, turn it into, a scary what goes bump in the night kind of thing or anything. It's just, it could go this way. Let's see.
Yeah, you can picture this being our world in 20 years.
Yeah.
You can see it happening.
If a couple of things happen, certainly, mm-hmm. certainly. And what I liked is it's, again, post-internet, and that means certain things have just kind of changed. There was one thing near, I think it's like a five or not, it's a way about halfway through. It's after the jump forward in time a little. And they're showing us just, the lay of the land or whatever, corner or whatever. And there's a Blockbuster. It's like in the world of streaming video and stuff, you're not going to have one of those. Well, guess what? If the internet goes away and is pretty much rejected and people said, that was a bad idea, things are going to pop back up.
Yeah.
Video rental places are going to be one of those. It was an interesting inversion of society and certain ideas and concepts. What was online now becomes offline, etc.
Yeah, and to see the rise of the library and, how important libraries were and how important print journalism was and what a big deal that it was. I mean, there were so many things that were explored on the surface and touched mm-hmm. upon, and then your imagination kind of ran wild after that because they didn't spend a lot of time on it because it was just part of the tapestry of the world.
Yeah.
And just brilliant. I just think you could live in this world for another 100 issues if you wanted to.
Easily. And I think you could go back through the 10 we've got and just kind of pull other little nuggets out of what's kind of implied mm-hmm. in this story or about this world. It's just almost incidental to the story they told.
I need to go to ComicDB and look up Marcos Martín's work too, because his art is brilliant on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just want to look at more of it. And I know he has a run on Daredevil somewhere, doesn't he?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Yeah. So I want to check that out and see what else, his important work that he's done recently that I can check out, because yeah, he just crushed it on this series.
Well, and what I liked about the way he did that is he didn't go crazy with, ooh, here's some fancy page layouts, or let me see how much I can either put in this panel or not, or he didn't get artsy. He didn't get
no
highfalutin. He just, he very well told a story, he made the art almost an invisible aspect of the craft of the storytelling. It didn't get in the way, and it just so got us immersed into the story. It was just really well done. So this is one that there is absolutely no excuse not to read this. If you've been able to listen to the podcast, you've got an internet connection. If you've got an internet connection, I think you can handle a web browser. If you can do that, you can get to panelsyndicate.com. At that point, all you need to remember is the name of the title, which is The Private Eye, and go download them. And yeah. If you want to, pay these guys for doing such great work. That may seem like a crazy idea, but you might want to think about it. So yeah, for me, solid A. I want to see what these guys do next and what Panel Syndicate does next.
Yeah, and we got a little thing in the back. They did mention that they'll be back. with something, probably together for another idea. And so I'm going to be ready for that. And you know what? I haven't checked out Universe yet, and I'm going to do that and see. I think it's one person who is the creator and artist on that, and just see what that's all about. It's an awful high bar.
It is, but they've shown what they can do. So, yeah. I mean, I want to see what else they do in the future.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to check that out. And then, once you have paid for an issue, you get on their mailing list. And so you'll get the occasional email where they let you know when something new is out. So that's a good way to stay connected as well.
That seems like the one thing I think they could have and possibly should have done differently, because it was hard for me to keep track of when the stuff came out, because I'll be honest, I haven't paid for it. That was a viable option that they gave me, so I took advantage of it. I don't think unfair advantage of it, because again, on the podcast, this isn't the first time we've mentioned the thing.
No.
And if there's excuse to mention it in the future, certainly we will. But I think if they had an email, maybe not as fancy of an email list, for those of us who are too cheap to pay, that wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah, I understand why they did it, but I understand the decision, but yeah, I agree. You know, that if you didn't pay for it, then you lost track of when that next one, and you just had to think of it occasionally, or you know, remember and go check the website and to see if something new is out, because it's not a Wednesday release type of a schedule that, you know, every week there's going to be something or every month there's going to be something at the same time. So yeah, it could have fallen through the cracks for a lot of readers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's no solicitation blurb. There's no, hey, it's expected to come out at this point. And I'm cool with that. I think it actually benefited them and their story to not have those limitations or those, stealing of thunder things like the solicitation blurb. But some kind of way of, hey, remind me when it's coming out.
Yeah.
But again, charging money for that doesn't seem unreasonable either.
Mm-hmm.
So, what else did you read this week?
I didn't read much of anything else yet. It's been a pretty busy week for me, so I just got the stuff read that we reviewed. How about you?
I've read a little bit more than that, but it has been an insane week or two for me. I literally just read these comics that we reviewed within the hour before we recorded this. I wasn't sure I'd get that done in time either. There were a few other things I had read earlier in the week before certain things just went crazy in my life. And one of the things I noticed leading up to Convergence with DC, many of their titles just got to a nice, clean, wrap it in a bow, the end.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll come back, maybe we won't. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of things this week. Wonder Woman, it's going to conclude its storyline in the annual that's just been solicited, so it comes out in a couple of months. One or two other titles ended very much on kind of a cliffhanger or, you know, come back next issue ending. I think one of the Superman books, Harley Quinn, a few others maybe. And it's like, well, that's going to be in 2 months. I will have completely forgotten about this stuff in 2 months, you know, particularly if Convergence is really great or Secret Wars kicks in really great or whatever. So I'm just a little puzzled by some of the decisions going on over at DC at the moment. Not saying they're wrong. I'm saying I'm not sold on them yet.
I was kind of kicking myself a little bit for not, we should have reviewed, the last issue of Batman Eternal instead of Convergence Zero. We could have saved that Convergence for issue number one, I think, because I think it was quite a feat, quite an endeavor. It worked really well. And I really enjoyed the final issue, and I enjoyed the series as a whole.
So. I would say as a whole, it was one of the most successful weekly series that they've done, creatively at least, whether it's financially as successful as the others, I'd have to go look up. There were a few places I thought it dipped a little.
Oh yeah, it had some missteps.
You know, for me, some of the Spectre stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there were one or two things here near the end where certain things just seemed to have happened, and maybe I missed when they happened or where they happened or whatever. But there were also certain aspects of the way the story wrapped up that I really liked, and a lot of the aspects of the okay, whodunit, you know, here's other characters that are being, I mean, they had a cast that was huge in the series.
It was, gigantic cast, a lot of callbacks, and really, really strong, and surprised me how well I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I, it was really, really great. And I hope they do more things like this.
This is one where do a year, take 6 months off or whatever to recharge, do another year. Certainly another Batman-centric one makes sense. I would do another one centric on either the Justice League or the Titans or something else where you can bring in a bunch of different characters. But do it like this, where there is a fairly solid through line that everything is very tightly orbiting around. Not like, oh, well, there's four different stories that tangentially relate.
Yeah, and I think you need a writing team and an art team like this that somebody can be the showrunner, and then the rest of the guys can kind of carry out the edicts and get that pen to paper. I think that really seemed to work with Scott Snyder kind of helming it and just letting the other guys, you know, write their stories within the framework.
Absolutely.
And I just thought that was a really cool way to do it. This is a team approach and attacking it that way. And it was really cool.
What I would recommend the people over at DC consider doing is checking out some of the Super Sentai shows. And I want to be clear, not Power Rangers, but the actual Japanese ones. Because they've been telling year-long weekly stories with, you know, sure, there's the occasional, you know, holiday break for Christmas or New Year or because some major event happens or whatever. But they've had an episode of the Super Sentai stuff every week for like the last 40 years, I think.
Chimney.
And yeah, every year it's like, okay, that one's done. Let's start a new team. You know, a new year-long arc. New villains, new characters, and there's similarity, whatever. But they've got that down to a bit of a science, I would imagine. How do you keep that momentum up? How do you keep the creativity up? What makes sense to go back to? What do you need to do new and different every year? And just how far in advance do you need to work? Now, granted, movie or a TV show different than a comic, but it was seeming like some of the more recent issues, the credits page on some of these weekly books, and I may be thinking more Earth 2 and probably more Earth 2, it just seemed like the credit page got longer and longer and longer on the art side. So I think they need to have a little bit more lead time to where they could do it in a little bit more of a, I don't say relaxed pace, I don't think that's possible with a weekly book, but something to where they're not under such crazy deadline pressure.
They didn't miss an issue.
Nope, they didn't.
And that's amazing because there were so many monthlies that didn't make it out on time. I think it's really impressive.
But I think that's also an aspect of why they had so many artists.
Yeah.
Gee, we're running a little late, so on this next issue, we're going to use 10 artists. You know, that you have to do that with a weekly book. But you're right. With some books being a little behind, Justice League's a good example of that right now. The fact that they got that week, that Batman Eternal didn't miss a week, and I'm pretty sure, well, virtually positive, that neither did the other two. They can get their trains to run on time. It's just harder to do with certain books where you want to keep the same creative team. So, it's a lot of fun. I hope they continue to do it. I'm more in favor of the, here's a really big story we want to tell, let's go do that, versus here's some stuff that's leading up to other events.
Yeah, I didn't read the other two.
I read them, but they're still kind of playing out, and I think that they're going to go for another couple of weeks, maybe. I'm a little unclear on that. And spin into Convergence. So I don't know if they kind of join that game a little late or how that goes. Or maybe
okay. I thought they ended too, but I didn't read them, so.
I think Earth 2 did. I'm not Earth 2 World's End. I mean, I'm not sure about the new 52 Futures End. I'd have to reread that. It's been a crazy week for me.
Yeah.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week for Weekly Comics Spotlight 400 as we discuss Convergence, Nightwing Oracle number 1 from DC, Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man number 12 from Marvel, and Jupiter Circle number 1 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.